They're going to be in the house controlling my refrigerator and my freezer. And I'll tell you, I like my beer cold, okay? Mm-hmm. Not lukewarm. Cold.
They take their last $25 trying to turn it into $500, and then they're knocking on the church's door.
On this episode of Pod Virginia. Pod Virginia. The return of payday lending.
The biggest problem that people had with payday loans back in the day was that everything was due all at once.
Ending solitary confinement.
People who are not allowed outside of a cell and no human interaction for, let's say, a month could develop significant mental health challenges if they don't already have them going in.
Just how smart are smart thermostats?
They can act on your behalf without you having said, yes, I'm setting my thermostat at this temperature.
Plus, we read your tweets and play a round of trivia. You're listening to Pod Virginia. Stick around.
As many as favor that motion will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The motion is agreed to. The ayes and nays are called for. Shall the motion to pass by be agreed to?
Madam President, I inquire the clerk if we completed the calendar.
Yes, sir.
Thank God.
I'm Michael Pope.
I'm Tom Bowman.
And this is Pod Virginia, a podcast that's looking forward to budget weekend. So this weekend, Thomas, is the big day when the money committees release all the budget details. I would imagine that's a pretty long weekend for all the staffers, right?
All of session is a marathon of work. So working on the weekend is par for the course for the General Assembly session for these staffers and also leading up to session. So yeah. It is a strange tradition, though.
Not the most pleasant thing to do over the weekend, dipping into all those budget details, but that's the weekend that's on the horizon here for many people this upcoming weekend. All right, let's get to the news. The return of payday lenders. Now, getting quick cash based on hours you've already worked. Hey, there's an app for that. And now the emergence of this new financial technology product is leading lawmakers in Richmond to start thinking about state regulations for this growing market. Republican Delegate Amanda Batten from James City County has a bill to create new fintech regulations.
The employee could use this service to access the wages that they've earned but not yet been paid during the current pay cycle. So this is not a loan. These are wages that have already, in fact, been earned.
The idea that earned wage access is not a loan, that's not a view that everyone shares. Dana Wiggins at the Virginia Poverty Law Center says she's worried about people getting caught in a debt trap.
The biggest problem that people had with payday loans back in the day was that everything was due all at once when you had to repay it. It was seen as an advance on your payday.
Yeah, so the concern there from Dana Wiggins and many organizations that are concerned about low-income people, vulnerable people, people who have found themselves in situations where they need quick cash, is that they might download this app and then suddenly get caught in a debt trap that they can never get out of. Kind of sounds like payday lending to me, but then you talk to the people who are involved in this industry, heard Delegate Batten there say, hey, this doesn't even really qualify as a loan. So is it or isn't it a question here is something to the lawmakers are really going to have to get their heads around.
Well, it is a loan. It's called a bridge loan specifically. Those are for small amounts of cash usually, and just to float you until you have more money in your account. And you do have to return that money. It's not a gift. And so regardless of whether or not there is an interest rate on that, it's still a loan. There's got to be a string attached. It's not free money.
The string attached is they make money. Yeah. I mean, they make money off of people who are desperate for quick cash.
Right. So what happens if you don't pay it back in a timely manner?
Then you might take another loan. I mean, this is part of the cycle of debt here that the Virginia Poverty Law Center is saying, hey, let's take a real hard look at this specific app and any of its competitors to see exactly how this works and how people, low-income people, vulnerable people might be taken advantage of by this new technology.
Yeah, and so this is just the next evolution for payday lending. We got rid of car title lenders at one point. They were all over the place. The point is that these are predatory loans. They're preying on wage workers who need quick cash to pay a bill. And so we absolutely have as a society a vested interest in making sure that these new financial products just are not another way for wealthy investors to profit on the backs of working people. We've got to ensure access to capital, regardless of income level, and it's got to be transparent and fair and not trap people in another cycle of debt.
All right, let's get to our next story. Ending solitary confinement. Republican delegate Glenn Davis and Democratic House Leader Don Scott are working together to ban solitary confinement at state prisons, and the effort is already moving forward in the House. Now, Davis and Scott even worked together to tour a prison in Sussex County together. And now the Democratic leader says it's time to end this practice, which some advocates call torture.
I want to make sure that folks are not put in a situation that exacerbates any mental health issues. We want to make sure people get treated humanely, make sure people have human contact. And we wanted to make sure that we put that as a statement of our values in the Virginia Code.
Glenn Davis says this bill will improve the lives of people who are in prison.
People who are not allowed outside of a cell and no human interaction for, let's say, a month could develop significant mental health challenges if they don't already have them going in. This assures that no one is in a cell more than 20 hours a day, and it ensures no one's in that environment where they're restricted more than 15 days consecutively unless there are severe exceptions.
Yeah, the involvement of Delegate Glenn Davis is really significant here, Thomas, because he is a Republican in the House. And, you know, we've talked about ending solitary confinement on the podcast several times. But the problem is it never went anywhere because the face of this effort is Senator Joe Morrissey. So he was able to get it out of the Senate, but then, you know, the Republican House would kill it. Now we've got something a little different here with Republican Delegate Glenn Davis leading the effort in the Republican-controlled House. That bill got out of a subcommittee with a unanimous vote.
Good. I'm glad to see this. Thank you, Glenn Davis and Don Scott, for carrying these bills. It is so important because solitary confinement is a form of torture, and it's shown to have devastating effects on people's mental health. And a growing number of states, by the way, Michael, are starting to ban this practice. Because we know that keeping people in isolation for extended periods, it's not only inhumane, but it's also ineffective. And so we've got to be looking at all of this to determine whether or not the system we've created actually meets our stated goals. And if the stated goal is to make sure that these people never commit another crime, which, you know, is going to be tough given the criminal code, but it's just not going to be effective, right? You're going to cause more mental health problems, which often people with mental health problems find their way into prisons.
So the politics are different this year because there's some Republican buy-in. However, even after it got out of that subcommittee with unanimous vote, Thomas, guess where the bill is heading now?
I don't want to ruin your narrative, Michael, so tell me.
I don't have a narrative, but the bill is headed toward the Appropriations Committee, where they're going to have to see if they can afford to do that. This is not free. This is not free. I mean, you have to pay to make this happen, and it's a pretty hefty price tag.
Yeah. So anytime you make an adjustment like this, there's a default fiscal impact that they assume. Whether or not it actually does, I would think something like this is actually kind of unquantifiable, because the staff are getting paid no matter which room the person's in. So, but voting unanimously to send something to appropriations is actually a soft way to kill a popular bill.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
Yeah. So, Michael, call me when this gets out of appropriations and makes it into the budget.
Thermostatic politics. So people who have smart thermostats in Virginia can sign up for a rebate program that allows them to save money if they allow utility companies to reduce the drain on the power grid during the hottest parts of the summer. So Senator Jill Vogel is a Republican from Fauquier County who introduced a bill to prohibit utilities from ever making any adjustments to your smart thermostat.
They can act on your behalf without you having said, yes, I'm setting my thermostat at this temperature.
Amanda Cox at Appalachian Power says people can opt into the program and they can also opt out.
And you can stop any of these events, which we only do in hot weather in Appalachian Power's territory. And if you decide that you do not want to participate
All you have to do is set your thermostat to what's comfortable in your home and you opt out of that event.
So this Senate panel actually killed this bill. It's not going anywhere, but it is worth thinking about some of these issues here, Thomas, because you know what we're really seeing here is kind of a fear of technology, of Big Brother changing the temperature in your house. You know, there was even some discussion from some of these senators about using this kind of smart technology to work with other smart devices in your house and controlling your lives. You know, we live in an era when there's all kinds of discussion about Jewish space lasers using smart thermostats to change vote totals with Italian satellites. And this is actually a concern for people out there. And so this Vogel bill actually, you know, has a little bit of that undercurrent to it.
Yeah, I'm not such a big fan of trafficking and that kind of conspiracy stuff. That said, with any kind of smart technology, thermostats or whatever, there's always a string attached. There, anything that's smart is collecting data on of course, usage, user data. And it could, hypothetically, if it's connected to Wi-Fi, take a lot more data than that. I will say that when this data is being sent to an American local company, that's not nearly as concerning as when the data packets are going overseas to another country, usually China, where they make these things. So look, the logic behind this program, though, is so that when the power grid is about to hypothetically, you know, if it ever got to a point where there was so much load on the grid that the grid couldn't keep up and was at risk of failure, that they could find a way to reduce it remotely without, you know, just shutting down people's power, which is going to be the alternative.
Yeah. I mean, that's the heart of the rebate program, is that if you have a smart thermostat and you want to participate in this program, you can sign up for it. So the only people whose thermostats are changed are people who signed on the dotted line here. The issue is a lot of people sign up for things they have no idea what it actually means, right? So they hear a rebate program. Hey, I want a rebate. That sounds good. I'll take some money. Not knowing that eventually one day, the hottest day of the year, your thermostat might change and it might be really hot in your house to prevent the entire power grid from going down in a disaster.
Yeah. And it's important to note that this is an opt-in and opt-out program, right? So if you don't want it, don't be signed up for it.
But there is this fear here of Big Brother coming into your house and changing the temperature in your thermostat and even your refrigerator. So Senator Mark Obenchain is worried about Big Brother changing the temperature in his refrigerator. Check out this part of the discussion.
They're going to be in the house controlling my refrigerator and my freezer. And I'll tell you, I like my beer cold, okay? Mm-hmm. Not lukewarm, cold.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty disconnected concern. But again, it's important to point out that programs like this, regardless of how you feel about the invasiveness of some of this smart technology, because it is certainly more invasive than we're used to. Again, it's to prevent the grid from failing on the like hot days when, you know, it doesn't happen so much here, but you know how sometimes in New York, California, you'll hear about rolling blackouts because it's gotten so hot and they have to shut down power for, you know, various reasons, I guess. And this is also going to be a situation that happens more often when it comes to man-made climate change leading to global warming. So we're already predicting a 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius rise in temperature. And this is going to start hitting, well, it's already hitting. We're already in some of the warmest years on record, but it's going to only get worse as time goes on. And so we do need to be proactive at addressing things like this. And, you know, if the concern is that you like your beer cold and you don't want on the hottest day of the year, your refrigerator potentially spoiling not just your beer, I would be more concerned about the food in my fridge. Again, the alternative is for it to go out entirely. And then no power means there's no refrigeration, not reduced refrigeration.
Well, the Europeans like to drink their beer warm. So, I mean, maybe it was an anti-European slam that Obenchain was getting there. I don't know. But why don't we play a round of trivia? All right. So last week we asked how many Indian tribes there are in Virginia. So Thomas, what's the answer? How many Indian tribes does Virginia have?
Well, how many do they have and how many? The actual question is how many Virginia Indian tribes does the state recognize? And it there is a distinction, because there are 11 Indian tribes recognized by the Commonwealth of Virginia. So they are, in order of recognition, the Mattapani, the Pamunkey, the Chickahominy, the Eastern Chickahominy, the Rappahannock, the Upper Mattapani, the Nansemond, the Monacan, the Charo-Hakka, the Nodaway, and the Potawatomi. And the Potawatomi, by the way, were recognized as recently as 2010. But again, there used to be a lot more, and only 7 of them have federal recognition, and the Mattapani are just asked the BIA, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, to recognize them federally as well.
Yeah, and that federal recognition comes with big money. So if you're an Indian tribe, you have a lot to gain by getting federal recognition, not state recognition. I mean, you went through the 11 that have state recognition. There's really actually not a lot that comes with state recognition. There's like a there's a program where you could get money to help you buy back part of your ancestral land. So that's good. Mm-hmm. But then federal recognition opens up the spigot to, you know, like...
Well, the COVID relief funds, for
one. All the COVID relief funds, the infrastructure spending...
Healthcare.
All those healthcare through the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
That's an important humanistic concern here when Indian tribes don't have federal recognition, the Mattapani being among them. So they're a tribe that John Smith made first contact with the Mattapani, and they still don't have federal recognition. And so when COVID hit, they were blocked out of the COVID funds in addition to the regular health and infrastructure spending. And by the way, the Mattapani and the Pamunkey Indians are the only two Indian tribes in Virginia that have reservations. Hmm.
All right. Well, let's get to our trivia question for next week. So we want to ask, what is the origin of the Lynch Law? So we'll get to that next week.
So if you think you know the origin of Virginia's Lynch Law, hit us up on Twitter at pod_Virginia.
Thomas, what's the latest you're hearing around the water cooler?
All right, so there's a really interesting Axios story from Alexi McCammond. Not an anomaly. 2020's red states have a higher murder rate. So the point of this story, Michael, is that somebody did the math and found that the murder rates in states that voted for Donald Trump are higher than the states that voted for Joe Biden.
Crime stats can tell you all kinds of really interesting points. You know, in fact, you know, in more recent years, there's been a concern about rising crime rates. In fact, you hear this all over right-wing media, rising crime, rising crime, rising crime. But in reality, the crime rates are actually going down and have been going down for some time, with one exception, the murder rate. So it's interesting, the one exception here to lowering crime trends is a crime statistic that you see more in Trump states than Biden states. Yeah, so pretty fascinating.
This isn't directly related to this point, but I saw an interesting fact that a lot of the reduction in crime can be attributed to removing lead from our environment. And, you know, lead used to be in everything. We know about paint and don't eat the paint chips. But pretty much everybody in this country, if you're over a certain age, has lead poisoning because it was a cumulative impact on your body and it never leaves. So that explains, like, the minute we got rid of leaded fuel, within years, people's IQ started rising, and because lead makes you stupid. And also violence went down because lead makes you violent.
Well, as a longtime heavy metal fan, I would say that it's probably time to get the lead out.
Michael, that joke was ironclad.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. What about you, Michael? What's the latest you heard around the water cooler?
Well, people are talking about casinos. So the Virginia Casino Act allows for 5 casinos in Virginia. And we've already got 4 of them already open or about to be open soon. So the real debate is, where's the 5th and final casino? And so there's a lot of competition between Petersburg and Richmond. So, you know, Richmond has already denied having a casino. Voters in Richmond said, thank you, but no thanks. We don't want a casino here. And that's really opened up an effort for Petersburg. And so the General Assembly is now considering this legislation from Senator Joe Morrissey that would allow Petersburg to have a referendum to see if they want to open a casino. And man, are there an army of lobbyists on this one, because Richmond also wants a casino. So it's kind of a Petersburg versus Richmond fight. And then you talk to people who will tell you casinos take advantage of vulnerable people. So do we really want a 5th casino? So, I mean, it's a pretty complicated story.
Yeah, if you want to see a case study of why casinos don't belong in most communities, just look at Atlantic City, right? They dropped in a bunch of casinos on the waterfront at Atlantic City on the boardwalk and instantly siphoned up all of the local wealth. And that town has a lot of issues. I mean, if you're concerned about violent crime, you know, casinos going in communities with that people lived in, as opposed to Las Vegas, where nobody lived before they built those casinos, it can cause a lot of problems. And it does siphon up wealth from mostly from, you know, your grandma and grandpa who are gambling away their Social Security checks at those slot machines. Michael, there's really only two places in Virginia that would be at least not detrimental to stick a casino, because you want a place that already has a lot of tourists. And so the two places is anywhere in the DC area to compete, you know, with some of the ones in Maryland, and then Virginia Beach. That's it.
You know, Thomas, one of the people who expressed concern about casinos during this very long subcommittee meeting was a religious person. Belinda Baugh is a pastor who worries that gambling harms vulnerable people.
And they take their last $25 trying to turn it into $500, and then they're knocking on the church's doors, or they're knocking on the nonprofit organizations and asking us to help them. I'm asking you, please reconsider and rethink.
Yeah, they're being asked to reconsider and rethink. And man, this is a difficult topic. I was in the room when the subcommittee was hearing all these different bits of testimony, conflicting testimony, and then they finally took a vote to move this bill forward. But these senators are, wow, they've got a lot they've got to balance here. There's the interest of Richmond versus the interest of Petersburg versus the interest of people who are concerned about the ill effects of gambling, as you just heard that pastor mention right there. I mean, there's a lot they've got to consider here.
Yeah, and Michael, count me in with this lady, because maybe it was because I was raised Southern Baptist, but I don't like casinos. And I really wasn't pleased with Democrats when they went to the mat to make it easier for people to lose their money in a casino. This is a predatory industry, which we don't really want in this state anyway. And there wasn't really a high demand for it. There wasn't a need for it. Certainly nobody actually wants them in their neighborhoods. Just look at that vote in Richmond. Now, there are, like, Bristol thinks that their casino is going to bring people to Bristol, and, you know, maybe.
They all think that. They all think this is going to be a huge driver of tourism, that they're going to get lots of employment. And it's true. They're going to get money for their schools. They're going to get money for their teachers and their firefighters. And a lot of money is going to be pumped into their local economy.
Yep. And then all of the small mom and pop shops go under, because when you're visiting a casino, you don't leave the casino. That's literally how they're built, is to keep you in. So they've got all the stuff right there on the inside. You don't need to leave and go walk down Main Street.
All right, let's head over to the listener mailbag. Thomas, go ahead and open up that Pod Virginia mailbag. What are listeners saying about the podcast?
Yeah, Zach Lincoln at Zach Lincoln VA says, the best way to spend a long flight, downloading and listening to copious amounts of Pod Virginia. So we agree.
Yeah, totally. It's
safe
a great
travels,
way.
Zach.
Yeah, safe travels. Brian Atkins was thrilled that we read his tweet on the air last week about people who are incarcerated being hit up for $1.25 for a packet of mayonnaise. Think about how corrupt that contract has to be, Thomas. $1.25 for a packet of mayonnaise. All right. So Brian Atkins wrote, quote, wow, that made my day. He posted that on Twitter. Just getting caught up with all the episodes to a hidden treasure of Virginia media. So he also says that he'll encourage all of his friends to listen in. So welcome to Pod Virginia.
And then our guest from last week, Harry Godfrey, posted a link to our previous podcast and said, catch me with Michael Pope and Thomas Bowman on the latest episode of Pod Virginia about why the Affordable Energy Act from Rip Sullivan, Lee Ware, Jennifer McClellan, and Cree Deeds is good electric rate policy, while the Dominion bill is problematic.
Yeah, you know, I was at Thursday Night Caucus last week, Thomas, and that episode with Harry Godfrey was the talk of the town. People were really interested in utility regulation and what we had and what Harry Godfrey had to say about it on our podcast.
It's good to know people are listening, and I hope you have a nice rest of your legislative session.
All right. One more thing before we go. We've got two birthdays to celebrate this week. Friday, February 3rd is the birthday of Congressman Rob Wittman. And then Sunday, February 5th is the birthday of Senate Majority Leader Dick Saslaw. So Saslaw's currently having his last session ever. I mean, he's like the most senior guy in the building. He's been around since the late 70s is when he was first elected to the House. So, the guy who's basically in charge of the Senate, and this is his last session ever, this weekend is his birthday. So if you see Leader Saslaw, tell him happy birthday.
Oh, very good. Happy birthday to Congressman Wittman and Senate Majority Leader Dick Saslaw. It will certainly be the end of an era when he retires, Michael. But that's it for this week's episode of Pod Virginia. Don't forget to check out our website and follow us on social media for more updates and discussions on Virginia politics.
Pod Virginia is a production of Jackleg Media. Our producer is Aryan Ballou, and our advertising sales manager is David O'Connell.
Find us on Facebook or Twitter, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and hey, write a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show.
Make sure to smash the subscribe button so you don't miss the next episode of Pod Virginia.
This podcast is so jackleg.